Case number 64 versus Astru 093473.
Good morning, Your Honors. Neil Eggeson on behalf of Plaintiff Appellant Daryl Poor. The issue before the court today, simply put, is whether in a retaliation case is evidence of subordinate influence, either by itself or combined with evidence of a shifting and dubious rationale for non-promotion, sufficient to establish the causal link under the direct method of proof. For subordinate influence, it is generally inappropriate to grant summary judgment where there is evidence that a subordinate influenced or affected the decision of the ultimate decision maker. That influence can occur by either withholding relevant information or providing false information to the decision maker. In this case, Al Kearns is the immediate supervisor of Mr. Poor. In 2005, Mr. Poor applied for a promotion to a senior attorney advisor position with the Social Security Administration office in Indianapolis. The ultimate decision was supposed to be made by Administrative Law Judge De La Torre. In making his application, Mr. Poor ended up being qualified. He was determined to be one of the three best qualified candidates for the position. And that best qualified certificate was sent from the SSA National Office to Judge De La Torre. However, somehow, Mr. Kearns intercepted it. Whether it was mailed to him directly or not is unclear in the record. It was addressed, however, to Judge De La Torre. Judge De La Torre never received it, and she never saw it. Mr. Kearns took that best qualified certificate. He reviewed its contents. Then he went to Judge De La Torre and lied about its contents. And he said, there's only one person on this list from within our region. That was a lie. And he goes further to explain to Judge De La Torre, because there's only one person in our region, and because we cannot provide relocation expenses or moving expenses to any of the other candidates, even though relocation expenses were specifically advertised in the position.
Now, there was someone from another area, but within the region, right?
That is correct.
And is the issue of travel expenses and that kind of stuff, if
that is
you're
correct.
In the region, you don't get paid for any of that. If you're some other region, you do get paid.
It is unclear from the record, but the argument appears to be that anyone who's not in Indianapolis would have required some type of relocation or moving expenses.
I see. So even though he said outside the region, they were at least outside the perimeter of, well, we'll say without having to pay for them.
That's correct. That's correct. However, the assumption that it had to be paid for, Mr. Poor would take issue with, because it is undisputed in the record that there was an option, and Judge De La Torre even acknowledges this, to request that the movement either waive the person who might have to move, either waive relocation expenses, or they could have requested the relocation expenses. The whole idea that relocation expenses were no longer available is based on an assumption and hearsay. So because of that, Judge De La Torre, again, never seeing the best qualified certificate, takes the information given to her by Mr. Kearns, and Mr. Kearns then, I forgot to add, says, by the way, we ordinarily are not required to make a selection if we only have one person to select. Based on that, Judge De La Torre didn't do anything else. No further investigation, didn't ask to look at the certificate, nothing else. She said, that's good enough for me. I don't want to make a decision based upon process of elimination. I am not going to make a decision. After that, nothing more happened with the certificate for 4 months.
What about that observation, or whatever you want to call it, that about if you only got a list of one, they usually don't hire them, or they prefer to have a three at least?
Judge De La Torre.
She bought it.
She bought it,
is
absolutely.
Is that wrong?
The evidence has been presented from Mr. McGinley's affidavit that was a longstanding policy in the district. However, Judge De La Torre didn't know that and never cited that. Judge De La Torre relied exclusively on her own personal subjective bias without any reference to any external source. Her personal bias was I don't want to make a decision based on process of elimination. Even though she testifies, I could have. So because of that, Mr. Kearns takes it and sits on it, takes that certificate and sits on it. It disappears for 4 months until the Social Security Administration calls him. They don't call Judge De La Torre. They call him to find out what happened to it. He signs it as the deciding official, as the selecting official, even though he wasn't supposed to be, and he sends it back. No one at Social Security Administration questions his signature as the selecting official. And then, the very next day, he goes to Mr. Poore and tells Mr. Poore, I was the selecting official. Those are the facts. Is there subordinate influence? Clearly, Mr. Kearns affected the decision, either by providing false information or withholding relevant information. He provided false information by lying about who was and was not on the certificate and the residencies of those individuals. He intercepted it. He signed as the selecting official. I've presented sufficient evidence, I would argue, in the brief, that he actually served as the de facto, the actual selecting official. But regardless of that, he certainly exercised enough influence to have affected the decision. Now, the dispute has arisen in the appellee's brief. Is affecting enough, or does one have to demonstrate singular influence? And I will defer to what I have briefed in the reply brief in that regard. But suffice it to say, there's a conflict, both in this circuit and in circuits elsewhere, as to just how much influence is necessary. Mr. Poore would posit, however, that even if this court decides that a singular influence standard is necessary, he survives that in this case. Because in order for there to be singular influence, there would have to be evidence that Judge De La Torre did some kind of external investigation or some kind of research on her own to find out that the information provided was false or to get additional information on which she based her decision.
I want to make sure I have a clear understanding of your evidence, because basically your position is because your client testified in the trial or testified against Kearns relative to those two other employees, that this was the basis for the animus toward your client. Is there any other evidence is there anything else in the record tying that?
Aside from Mr. Kearns's efforts to insinuate himself into the process when he supposedly was not the selecting official, no.
So we're looking at it circumstantially, the inference that could be
right.
Drawn. And what was the outcome of the previous litigation in which he testified?
It's my understanding that those complainants chose not to proceed. I don't know if there was a decision on the merits or not, to be perfectly candid.
What was the period of time that elapsed between whatever testimony or something that he didn't like versus all of this coming
up? 2 years.
2 years?
2 years. Because of that, when Judge De La Torre did no investigation at all, she was not able to insulate her decision from Mr. Kern's clear and undeniable influence. Thus, we have a supervisor with discriminatory animus. By operation of the subordinate influence doctrine, that animus is imputed to Judge De La Torre. She did nothing to insulate herself from that decision, and then suddenly the best qualified candidate, who, by the way, satisfies all of the budgetary constraints that have been brought up and that are of concern, suddenly does not get the position. Because of that, we respectfully request that this court reverse the decision of the district court and remand. With the court's permission, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. or Mrs. Richards, which is it? Miss? Okay.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Deborah Richards, and I'm an assistant United States attorney representing the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration. With respect to Mr. Poore's counsel's comments, I would notify the court that there are some inconsistencies with what the evidence shows and what the factual statements were that were made. The facts that are undisputed are that Judge Lilios was the selecting official for the position and that he would ask the hearing office judge the hearing office chief ALJ, in this case Judge De La Torre, for a recommendation as to who should be selected for a position. And these vacancies for attorneys would go through a process that involves several different people, from Mr. McGinley, Judge Lilios, Judge Della Torre, and then various administrative people such as Addie Price, Mr. Kearns, and otherwise. Now, Mr. Poor claims that he was retaliated against in 2006 when Judge Della Torre decided not to select anyone, including Mr. Poor, for this attorney position. And he bases this claim upon his own participation in protected activity in 2003, approximately 3 years earlier, even though that was participation that Judge Della Torre did not know anything about. The Seventh Circuit has long held that this lack of knowledge on the part of the decision maker is a fatal flaw in a discrimination case. And while Mr. Poor seeks to impute knowledge by Mr. Kearns to the judge, he bases it upon this misstatement that had absolutely no impact on her decision. The fact that he told her, and what Mr. Kearns told her is slightly different than what counsel said, but what he told her was that we have a certificate, we have one candidate, Roy Rogers is from Region 9, and one candidate is also from another region, and then we have Mr. Poor. Judge Della Torre actually had extensive knowledge as to why candidates from outside the state of Indiana could not be selected. From the time the vacancy announcement was opened on November 15th, just prior to that, various events proceeded that let her know that she could not select people who would require moving expenses. Congress did not pass a budget for Social Security at the end of the fiscal year in October 2005, and they began operating on a continuing resolution. In addition to that, in January of 2006, there became a temporary hiring freeze, and that meant that no new hires could be hired and that FTEs could not be shifted throughout in the region. In addition to that, when Congress did pass the budget and the Office of Disabilities and Adjudications Review received their budget in February of 2006, that budget was over $2 million less than it had received the year before. All of this was subject to monthly conference calls and other conferences that Judge Della Torre took part in the months leading up to her conversation with Mr. Kearns. Judge Lilios gave her the information. Mr. McGinley gave her that information. The other management teams participating in the phone conversations on these budgetary issues all discussed it, because all of the regions were, all of the states under Region 5 were interested in hiring people, and they were all concerned with what they could do. So this information that Judge Della Torre had what is sufficient to give her the grounds for the decision that she made, and that was it is based on her experience, based on her training as a manager, that and based upon the fact that she knew certificates were returned with non-selections made where there was an insufficient pool of candidates, she knew that she did not have to select from a certificate where there was only one viable candidate. And as she indicated in her affidavit, it didn't matter who the viable candidate was. It was the fact that there was just one candidate. It's a long-standing common practice of Region 5 to seek a certificate that has a sufficient pool of candidates, and that's so that you can assure that a best-qualified candidate can be selected. All of that infused her decision. Now, in addition to that, in this whole process of a vacancy announcement being considered, it goes back to Region 5, and Mr. McGinley's position and what his job required him to do, he had intimate knowledge of all the budgetary concerns, and his job was to participate in this hiring process. He reviewed independently the decision that Judge Della Torre made, which was not to make a selection from that certificate. He concurred with every step of the way on what she said. Mr. Kearns didn't have any influence on Mr. McGinley. Mr. McGinley made that decision, and that in itself shows that her decision was appropriate. Now, Mr. Poore seems to argue that any misstatement at all by someone who has knowledge of this protected activity would be sufficient to cause the court to go to the next step to look whether an investigation had taken place. However, that simply would be way too broad and is not supported by the case law in this circuit. For instance, a certificate contains personal information, and if the cover sheet on a certificate is red, and Mr. Kearns was to hand that to Judge De La Torre and say, here's the certificate, the cover sheet is maroon. Well, that is a misstatement, but it's not affecting the actual decision that Judge De La Torre would make. And that's the same thing in this case. Whether he said the two candidates were from outside the region, or he said one was outside the state and one outside the region, or the two candidates were from outside the state, the result is the same. There was no moving expenses available. And while Mr. Poore claims that perhaps there was an option that you could ask a candidate, if you want the job, will you pay your own expenses? The undisputed facts in the record is that before a candidate could be offered a position, moving expenses would have to be approved by Falls Church, Virginia. And that wouldn't happen in the scenario that Mr. Poore posits. In addition, Mr. McGinley has testified that it would be extremely inappropriate for management to ask an attorney to pay his own relocation expenses. And even if the attorney agreed to it, that could not be counted upon. Mr. Poore has given no evidence of anyone who was ever asked to pay for their own moving expenses. There's absolutely nothing to dispute that evidence, and that is not was not a viable reason for that to occur. As I mentioned earlier, the evidence supports the independent knowledge that Judge De La Torre had of the reasons why she did not have to select someone from that certificate. She knew of the budgetary problems occurring within the Social Security Administration, and she knew of the reasons why it is not advisable to select a candidate from a certificate with only one viable candidate. While Mr. Poore argues that that's a subjective reason on her behalf, the fact of the matter is there's only one person that had any knowledge that Mr. Poore had participated in protective activity, and that was Mr. Kearns, who had a ministerial role in making sure that the certificates were accounted for. In addition, as Mr. Poore has admitted, there was never any animosity, any retaliatory conduct whatsoever by Mr. Kearns or anyone else from the time he gave his testimony in 2003 to the time of the non-selection. And so there's just nothing really to support that in this case, that that Mr. Kearns even had a problem in that. Now, I would like to just call attention to the court that there are three things that Mr. Poore brings up new in his reply brief for the first time, and it is our contention that those were waived. And that is for the first time he brings up the matter that Mr. Kearns, that this was the first time that Mr. Kearns would have had opportunity to retaliate against him. However, he didn't bring that up in his opening brief, and that is waived. And he also argues this lesser standard, and that was not brought up until the reply brief. However, we would note that the district court itself applied a standard that Mr. Kearns did not cause or significantly influence the decision to cancel the attorney vacancy announcement, and that's in their decision at page 16 and 18.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Richards. How much time does Mr. Eggerson have? 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just three or four points very briefly. First and foremost, counsel describes Mr. Kearns' involvement as ministerial. Mr. Poore's position is based upon the evidence we've provided. He's actually the de facto selecting official. To say that his role is ministerial based upon signing as the selecting official, representing himself as such, intercepting the best qualified certificate is disingenuous. Second, the argument that the entire argument that this was Mr. Kern's first chance to retaliate against Mr. Poore was waived. That goes to the length of time, obviously, between the testimony and the retaliation. The evidence is uncontradicted in that regard. It is in the record, and it was argued before the district court. And I believe it was also cited in the facts of the appellant's brief. So to say that that is new or raised for the first time, we would strongly disagree with that.
Do you agree that that two-year time period is problematic for you?
It is not, and here's why. A two-year temporal proximity has never been considered a necessary condition for retaliation. Sometimes it's a sufficient condition, but it has never been considered a necessary condition. And the evidence is undisputed. This really was Mr. Kern's first opportunity. So regardless of how this court defines proximity, we would argue that the proximity is there. But third, and perhaps the most important point here, is all of this discussion of continuing resolutions and budgets, please do not be misled. It is a complete and errant red herring. Here's why. Because even if we take everything that they say at face value, that the budget precluded them from offering moving expenses or anything of this sort, at the end of the day, Judge De La Torre had a candidate who was best qualified, who is in the Indianapolis office, would not require transfer of a slot, would not require relocation expenses, would not require anything that would impact the budget at all. And she decided not to select that individual based on nothing more than a subjective bias that had never been presented before, had never come up before, and that, frankly, she didn't even know was an option until Mr. Kearns told her that we ordinarily aren't required to select if there's only one person. Consequently, we request that the court reverse the decision of the district court.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. We'll take the case under advisement.